Greetings and welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 119, coming to you from the Watchdog Studios here. Pine Room Studio inside the Watchdog Studio, downtown Wheeling here on a post-Super Bowl midweek. Weird day out there weather-wise. Little warmer than normal. A little snow this morning. Little freezing rain. A little bit of everything out there. And not a bad day. If you're somebody like me and you like weather like this, you'll take it. But nonetheless, we push on here. A couple weeks into February, football is finally done, which I couldn't be happier about. We'll get into the Super Bowl here momentarily. Just, again, a lackluster game once more. Just all the hype, it never lives up to it. And it's been a miserable season, not just from picks-wise, but just overall. Just a very poor product, very unfortunate that the NFL has gotten this bad. And I know a lot of people disagree with that, but from the time that I've started watching NFL, I just feel like it gets worse every year, and maybe it's the same for all the sports. But we're going to focus on the positives here. Let's try to win some money. It was not a great week, of course, mostly due to the Kansas City Chiefs having a very poor performance in the Super Bowl. So that sunk a lot of our wagers from last week. Could have been a lot worse, though, I will say. So we'll push on. Time for college basketball and NASCAR and golf getting into full swing. And we got Four Nations hockey coming up and plenty of soccer. That's one thing that we are still doing very well in. So if you are just a soccer bettor here on Better's Last Stand, you're following our soccer picks, you're doing very, very well. Very, very well. Like, disturbingly well. But to recap everything, again, we are very transparent here. We give you the losses. We give you the reasons why. Or actually, we don't even make a lot of excuses. There's not a whole lot of excuses to be made. Sometimes you have the right play, and it doesn't turn out the right way. Other times you have the wrong play, and it does. So, you know, you take it for what it's worth. You keep trying to push on. You try to stay in the lane that you're most comfortable in. And hopefully we give you a wide variety. I don't suggest that everybody bet all these picks on the show just blindly if you're not interested in them. But you might want to start jumping on the soccer bandwagon here at some point, because it's been very lucrative and has kept us out of, it kept us out of a major hole this week. But we were still a little bit under par, so to speak. We were not under par in a bad way. So under par normally be a good thing for golf, but in the grand scope of sports betting this week, we were not very good. We were down just under 2 units, minus 160, so about one bet, basically. Not awful, but not good. Super Bowl, we were minus 1415, so about 14.15 units for the Super Bowl, which is not good. But, you know, could have been a lot worse. Soccer saved us. College hoops, we were 6-4, plus 160 on the weekend. FA Cup last weekend, a staggering performance here for us. If you follow these FA Cup picks, you had a very, very good weekend. We were 11 wins, 0 losses, and 2 pushes over and up over 14 units. So 14.10 units, we were up in those FA Cups. Some outright dog winners. I know we had somebody at plus 360 that won for us. So we had a really, really, really good performance in soccer once again. No Premier League last week, but we're 69-43-3, 61% over the last 6 weeks, 50.95 units up there. And if you add the FA Cup into that, we're up over 65 units in soccer over the last 6 weeks. Really, the FA Cup, like I said, was just over the weekend. So very good performances there. We're 2-1-2 so far in our Champions League with some stuff pending right now. We got one winner in already today. We had, let's see, what game do we have? Oh, we had Bruges, Club Bruges and Atalanta. Had that one of both teams to score and an over, and Club Bruges gets the 2-1 win with a goal in stoppage time. Got Benfica and Monaco right now. We got Bayern Munich against Celtic, and we have Feyenoord, who was one of our upset picks there at a nice plus price. They are taking on AC Milan and leading 1-0. So we'll keep you apprised of those. Golf, not too bad. I'm really disappointed last week because I almost pulled the trigger on Daniel Berger, but I gave it one more week because I knew he was starting to round into form. But I thought, you know, probably a top 20 this past week and be ready to you know, blow the top off with him at a big price maybe this week. But it didn't work out. He almost won the tournament last week. So I jumped in on him after Friday's round, got him at a decent price for top five and to win. He didn't win, but he was in the top five. He actually finished tied for second, I believe. So a great performance out of him. Wish I would have given that one out. Not Not as good as last week for golf. We were up 19 units last week, but we did have 10 of our 11 make the cut, including top 10 out of Maverick McNealy. We had top 20s out of Cam Young and Minwoo Lee. Overall, we were down about 4.8 units in golf. So not great. Once again, not as good as I want to do, but you know, sometimes we're going to have those weeks. And the one thing about golf, even though we were down 4.8 units this week, we were up 19 last week. So we'd still be up and ahead, and all you need is one good day, one good weekend in golf, and you can cover a lot of ground. All right, recapping Super Bowl 59 here on Bettor's Last Stand, show number 119. Thanks for joining us here on the Watchdog Network. You're getting you ready for a weekend, a quieter weekend, I guess, but it's the Daytona 500. So to me, they say it's the Super Bowl of racing. Well, I'd rather be watching this Super Bowl than last week's. That is for sure. My thoughts on the game. Philadelphia took advantage of some very poor, I would say, scheme-wise for Kansas City. I thought once they realized that their line was getting just brutally battered and beaten, they probably should have made some adjustments. They did not do that. I think maybe they overestimated their own selves a little bit, thought maybe it would just work the kinks out eventually. Philadelphia came to play, no doubt about it. But Philly let them hang around a little bit in the first half. Kansas City was awful in the first half, and Philly didn't shut the door on them until very late. Those couple key turnovers, obviously not good. The one Mahomes gets his legs, you know, rolled up on, and then another one, too, he throws in a mistimed route, and the guy picks it off. So not a good performance out of him, no doubt about it. But I knew the Chiefs were in trouble on the very first drive. They got a three and out from Philly. Our under's looking great. Our under, no score in the first 5 minutes. All that stuff's looking good, which that did cash, one of our few things that did cash. But Travis Kelce drops a crucial third down where he probably would have been able to make a guy miss and probably gain, I don't know, 15 to 20 yards on the play, get the Chiefs a little momentum, get him moving. Well, nothing happened. I mean, it was three and out after three and out after three and out. And, you know, obviously the line was a story of the game, and it was very similar to the way Tampa abused Kansas City in the Super Bowl a few years ago. But Andy Reid and Matt Nagy, they said was the guy calling the plays. They never really adjusted. They didn't move the pocket. And you have an athletic quarterback in Mahomes. I don't understand why you weren't rolling him out and doing some stuff to try to get them off balance. No screens, no nothing. Nothing to keep that defensive line at bay. It was very, very odd for an NFL team to get beaten that badly from what was considered to be a pretty good coaching staff. So definitely not Andy Reid's best. But, you know, credit to Philly. They did everything they needed to do to win. I didn't think Philadelphia was anywhere near the best team in the league this year. I thought they had a lot of holes in various times of the season. I thought the Rams should have beat them in Philadelphia in the first round of the playoffs. So I don't know. Again, you could replay this 50 times and get a bunch of different winners and different outcomes or whatever. But Chiefs weren't ready. They just did not look themselves at all. And I know everybody's happy. He says they were overrated and they stink and they're terrible. And Mahomes is the worst quarterback to ever play and all that stuff. It's just way, way, way overblown and too much of an overreaction. So Kansas City will be back. I have more confidence they return to the Super Bowl than I do Philly. But we'll see. Line plays, what it all comes down to. In high school, at college, at the pro level, if you do not have solid or adequate line play, it doesn't matter what your skill players are. And Kansas City looked old and tired, and they're probably ready for a break. They played a lot of football over the last couple of years, but no excuses. We were not good in those bets at all. Again, it was negative 14 units here, and a lot of tough ones there. Obviously, none of the MVPs are coming in. None of the scores are coming in. We had to Karloff the sack. That one come in okay. The no score, and the first 559 was a good one. First half under, we held on there for a point. We did have the field goals over. I didn't expect it to go like that. I thought Butker would be the guy making 3 and 4 field goals, but it was Elliott. So nonetheless, put the football season to bed, thank God. Just horrible stuff. Just a really, really bad game, a really bad everything. Just bad, bad, bad all the way around. Just not entertaining at all. But congratulations, Philadelphia, on to a break. No more football talk till July or August, and that can't slow down enough to get here. I don't want it to come. I would prefer that the NFL just folded and college football folded, but I know I sound negative, but this is all-time worst for these products, and I don't know. A lot of people think it's the best. I couldn't disagree more. All right, on to something that is a little bit more positive. Let's talk a little bit of baseball, and we're not going to talk a whole lot about the Pirates, but I do have a bet on the Pirates here for our futures markets. I posted several futures last week, and actually late January, a couple of weeks ago, MLB early futures, BLS underscore PRP. You can find all of those. I have the Royals over their win total, the Reds over their win total, the Giants over their win total, and the Nationals over their win total, the Twins and Cubs under their win total, Kansas City to win the AL Central, Cincinnati to win the NL Central, and for the Nationals, Reds and Giants to make the playoffs. So you can find all those up there on BLS underscore PRP. Pitchers and catchers reported the other day. Things are going on. You're getting a lot of discussions about which guys are ready for spring training, which guys aren't, who's going to be signed late, which guys are coming back from injuries. So a lot to still unpack here before we give our official division predictions and our predictions on the AO and NL pennant. I'll have those probably here in a couple of weeks, but want to see how these teams come together, if there's been any late acquisitions to the roster and so forth. But here's a few things that I thought were interesting and some bets I'm putting on my radar. I'm most likely going to make all these plays, but you just got to cross the T's and dot the I's to be sure you're not missing anything here. So early February add-ons here, show number 119 for Bettor's Last Stand. NL Central, you can find the exact outcomes here. You could actually like pick all five teams, what order they'll finish. That's a little bit difficult to do. But we're going to go over the Pirates to finish last in the division. I think they're by far the worst team in this division. I don't even think it's close. The Reds, to me, major upgrade with Terry Francona. He will win them 8 to 10 more games just himself. No doubt about that. He gets more out of his roster than anybody. And if you flipped Shelty with the with Terry Francona, I'm sure you would see a vast difference. And I think at plus 230, it makes sense for the Pirates to finish last in that division. Sadly, Paul Skeens is going to probably be victimized by several close losses where he gets beat 2-1 or 1-0, something like that. But I do like Skeens over his strikeouts, at least adjusted number. I think he'll strike out over 220 hitters this year. So we're going to go with Skeens over 220 Ks at a plus price there. I like that quite a bit. But it's not going to matter. Unfortunately, you like to be able to say lead the league in wins or something, but that's probably not going to happen. It's just the product of the team that he's on. But we're going to go into the American League, though, from where I think he can find a little bit of value. I think the Boston Red Sox are getting slept on a little bit. They have a really good lineup, and they have a very good starting pitching staff now. Now, the bullpen, they just lost Kenley Jansen. I don't know what they're going to do there. They have not had a good bullpen in years, and that could be the downfall of the team. But I think the Red Sox to make the playoffs at even money right now, I think that's pretty good. They've added Garrett Crochet. They've added Walker Buehler. They already have Brian Bello, who's a very good arm in the starting pitching realm. And they got Lucas Giolito. If they could rehabilitate him a little bit, they could be very, very good. Tough division. Obviously, Toronto's expected to be a little bit better. The Yankees expected to be okay, of course. And then the Orioles. Orioles, again, another team that's just very, very disappointing for the Orioles. They've not done hardly anything in the offseason, and they're really squandering on opportunities with their really good lineup and a good young core. But they just don't have an ace. They let Burns walk, and they're talking about trying to get Dylan Cease in a trade, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I would definitely probably try to make that. You got Charlie Morton now as your number one. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez has number one stuff, but he's way inexperienced and is at least two or three years away from being a number one guy. And Zach Eflin, I mean, he's a number three at best, a solid number three, but he's nothing more than that. And they're doing the same thing that they used to do. They're being cheap, and it's really, really going to be – it's going to be a complete waste. It's the Pirates are taking a lot of crap from people right now, rightfully so. They probably have the worst owner in sports. But right now I thought that the Orioles were going to change direction here when Peter Angelos finally died, that they were going to finally start to spend some money and add – they only need, like, two things. You really needed to go out and get two legitimate – close down pitchers. Your bullpen should be better this year because you get Bautista back from Tommy John. He missed all last year. The bullpen will be, they lost Danny Colum. They're going to be all right in the bullpen. The starting pitching is laughable. It's not a starting staff, and if I'm wrong, I'll be happy to be wrong. But if you're going out with Zach Eflin on opening day, you're not going to do much, and that's just so disappointing. If you would have went out and made a splash and got even if you got Max Fried and you got one other guy, like you know, at least it shows you're trying, but they're not, and it's really bothersome. So, two teams I like, two cheap owners. But we're going to go with another team I like. So, the Red Sox, then anyway, back to the the task at hand is finding winners here on Bettors Last Stand. And I'm going to the Red Sox here. I think even money for them to make the playoffs. I think they have a very good staff, and I expect big, big things from Jarren Duran. He is one of the most exciting five-tool dudes you're going to find in Major League Baseball right now. If you're not aware of him, he's the leadoff hitter for the Red Sox, and he can do everything. He can run, he can field, he can hit. He just does everything. He's really, really, really good. Doesn't have the home run power of some of these other guys or hit the pretty home runs, but this guy does everything well. Jarren Duran to steal 30 bases, I think, is a really good price. I would take that immediately. And really, a long shot to be MVP in the American League. If things worked out and the Red Sox had a really good season, they win, you know, 105 games and they win that division somehow. Duran's alive for the MVP at 30-1. He makes everything go. Hitting behind him, Tristan Casas, who hit, I think, 28-29 home runs last year. He's just starting to come into his own, the first baseman. I think he'll hit 30 home runs. I think that's a bet worth looking at. You can get that at a plus price right now. Garrett Crochet to lead the league in wins at 22-1. Again, if things would turn out well and their bullpen is okay, they got a good team. The Red Sox have a good team. So I expect big things out of them. They could win triple figures. Maybe they have the best record in the American League, best record overall at 22-1. That might be a little bit of a stretch. Or Garrett Crochet to have the best, the most amount of wins for a pitcher, 22-1. I think he can do that. I think he can win 17, 18 games with the amount of support he's going to have. I think he can definitely get it done. I thought Cole Reagans for the Royals was also worth a look. The Royals are going to be very good. We tipped them out as a team that we really like. 28-1 on Reagans to lead the league in wins for the Royals, who I think will win the American League Central this year. A couple of other pitcher props here. I thought Michael King for the Padres at 55-1 to lead the league in strikeouts was a tempting number. This guy struck out over 200 last year, and he's just finding himself. He hasn't even scratched the surface of how good he can be. Very similar to Brandon Faught, who was in the World Series a couple of years ago. He's the number three guy for the Diamondbacks. Had a pretty solid year last year with good K numbers. And he's, again, he hasn't even got to his peak yet either. So I think he at 90-1 could be sneaky. And you got to look for guys like that, because these young arms, these guys are going to get, you know, sneaky opportunities against lineups. Whereas, you know, sometimes your older pitchers, they may sit a start or scratch or bump down or whatever, you know, when they're trying to save arm. But these young guys, they're just going to go all out. As long as they're healthy, they're just going to keep firing innings. And I think Michael King at 55-1 and Brandon Faught for the Diamondbacks. Michael King for the Padres, of course, 55-1. Faught for the Diamondbacks at 90-1 to lead the league in Ks. I think both those bets are pretty good. I'll post all these at BLS_PRP, but it's nice to be talking a little bit of baseball. Unfortunately, it was a miserable offseason for the Pirates, and they continue to be just a laughing stock, and it's just disgusting. If you're going out and supporting them, I feel sorry for you, and I would rethink it, because this guy is just going to keep stealing your money and giving you nothing in return. So outside of Skeens, nothing to see there. Probably the worst lineup in the big leagues this year, and I'm not exaggerating. It's a pathetic lineup. Just look it up. It's really, really terrible. You got a shortstop playing center field. I mean, it's gonna be a catastrophe. Sheldy's going to be the fall guy eventually. He'll get fired, and he'll be working at 7-Eleven probably, because that's about what his credentials would dictate. I'll have some extensive futures here in the coming weeks. As I said, we'll pick all the division winners. We'll pick the pennant winners in each side, maybe a couple other season-long props and awards perhaps, but we'll be focusing in. Baseball is right around the corner, and you know what else is right around the corner here on Bettors Last Stand Show 119 on the Watchdog Network? Is college basketball, March Madness. March Madness, it's not really right around the corner. It's 6 weeks away, or 5 weeks away. It's actually less than 6 weeks away. Hard to believe, 5 weeks from March Madness. Last week I talked about some obvious teams. It looks like it's a five-horse race type thing. But Auburn and Alabama, who play this week. Florida, who has been very good. I'm very impressed with them. Now, they did lose to one of their big men the other night. Not sure how bad he's hurt. It didn't look good at the time, but now they're saying it's just an ankle sprain. At the time, I thought it was way worse than that. If they get him back for the stretch run or, you know, for the SEC tournament stuff, they'll be okay. But Florida has really impressed me. They can defend and they run a pretty good offense. They can shoot the ball. They can play inside and out, which is a key. A lot of these teams really, really struggle to do one thing or the other. Florida does it all well, and I'm impressed with them. They're moving up on the stock meter for me right now. So right now, Auburn, Alabama, Florida, Duke, and Houston – I dropped Iowa State, Michigan State. I thought they were better than they are. That West Coast trip proved that they are not very good. They're just okay. So I'm not really thinking they're going to do a whole lot, you know, in March. Keep an eye on St. John's, though. We talked about them. They're playing pretty well still. They're the by far, in a way, the best team in the Big East. It's not even close. The rest of those teams, UConn had a big win the other night, but they're just okay. St. John's, without a doubt, is the only team in the Big East that can make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. I just tell you right now, Creighton and Marquette and, you know, UConn and Xavier, they're not any good. They couldn't beat any of these top 7-8 teams in the SEC when it matters. So high on St. John's, still high on Auburn and Alabama, who match up this week. Florida way, way, way up on them. Duke, despite losing last week, they were bound to drop a game. They're still really, really good, and on their neutral, they'll be hard to beat. Houston defends. They just can't score. Tennessee, big problem. They can't score. Kentucky beat them last night, swept them on the season. So SEC's a murderer's row. Alabama's got a ridiculous schedule coming up. And just to tell you, they play Auburn two times. They get them at home this week, and then they finish up, I think, at Auburn. But they still got to go to Missouri. Then they got Kentucky at home, and then Mississippi State at home. This is brutal, a brutal stretch run for these teams in the SEC, especially Alabama right now. Alabama right now around 11-1 to win it all, plus 180 to make the Final Four. Don't hate it. They're really talented. Michigan State, another team we talked about in recent weeks, 30-1, plus 950 to make the Final Four. I've cooled a little bit on them. Ole Miss, starting to round into form a little bit, still a little inconsistent for me, 95-1 to win it all, 25-1 to make the Final Four. I think they got the coaching. They have a pretty decent roster, and if things broke their way, they could probably do it still. Duke, minus 120 to make the Final Four, plus 380. Those prices too short for me. Florida, I still think there's very good value. You can get 240 on them to make the Final Four. 17-18-1 to win it all. I think that's worth a bet for sure. Texas Tech, I thought they were a little bit better. I've watched them a couple times recently. They're a little better than I initially thought. You can get them about 30-1 to win it all, 7-1 to make the Final Four. And how about Mick Cronin? He goes nuts on his team a few times, and boy, they've responded. They lost the other night on the road, but they did cover, and they played very well. UCLA, 95-1 to win it all, 25-1 to make the Final Four. Don't sleep on them yet either. Well-coached, again, in a team that's battle-tested and will be ready come March. Houston, around 8.5, 9-1 to win it all, 275 range to make the Final Four. I just don't know if Houston has the offense to be able to do this. I feel like they're going to run into a team one night that shoots really well against them, even though they're good on defense, and they just can't keep up. So that's the problem with them. St. John's, 42-1 to win it all, 650 to make the Final Four. I still think that's worth a look. St. John's, to me, well-coached, very battle-tested. The only thing they can't do is continue to dig themselves holes, because eventually they're not going to be able to get out of it. Auburn, 360 to win it all, minus 110 for the Final Four. Probably the best team top to bottom, but you know, a long way to go. They're probably your most consistent team. Kentucky, 35-1, 9-1 to make the Final Four. Couple good wins at home recently. I think they're on the right track. I just don't know if they'll be consistent enough and be able to, handle the ball well enough. Guard play could be a little bit of an issue, and guard play is just so important in this. Not only do you have to have, even if your inside guy can't score, if he can defend a little bit and rebound, that's good enough. You look at a team like Clemson. They beat North Carolina the other night, just blew them out of the building because North Carolina has zero inside presence. They couldn't stop them. Clemson's going to lay up inside every single time. But Clemson's guards will be their downfall. Yeah, they beat Duke, and they were fired up, and that's a game that you figured Clemson's going to play their very best, and Duke was just due for kind of an off game. Duke still almost beat them, but guard play for Clemson will be an issue. I think Clemson's guards stink, so I don't think they'll go very far. I think a Sweet 16 at best for them. Solid team, but not going to be somebody that's going to scare me a lot. Iowa State, they've been a little bit on the downtick. They're $12 to win it all, plus 320 to make the Final Four. Don't know if I can trust them, especially off their home court. They're a concern. And a team that we talked about earlier in the season, Coach Calipari, and he gets a lot of flack for just squandering all these NBA lottery picks and not winning enough in college. But part of the problem is the guys would leave after 1 year. So I think if he would have had more time with them, chances are they probably would have won a little bit more. So that's not all on him. It's a product of the system. And I'm not sitting here sticking up saying he's the best coach there is. But I do think he is a really good impact coach as far as what he does for players in their actual real lives. And I think guys play very hard for him. But Arkansas, to me, is trending in the right direction right now. They seem to be a team that's starting to figure a few things out. Are they great? No. Will they beat all these teams on the road in the SEC? No. But they're dangerous enough if they get in there and they would get the right setup that they can make a little bit of a run. 250-1 to win it all. I'm not suggesting that they can win it all. That's pretty almost impossible. But they could, make the Elite Eight. And I think they could get a few breaks. Maybe they go to the Final Four. So you get that around 120-1, I think, to make the Final Four, which seems ridiculous. But Arkansas, team to watch out for, at least coming down the stretch, especially in SEC play. A couple of plays that I had on the radar for Saturday, and I don't know the numbers on these, so I'm kind of guessing, and I did not have time to go through and make my own on these, so I'm totally just guessing off of my own just mind as far as what I would have these power rated roughly in these areas. It might not even be close. But Tennessee, coming off of a loss against Kentucky the other night, they take on Vanderbilt at home on Saturday. Rivalry game. Vandy beat him the first time by a basket. I imagine this would be around like 7.5, 8.5 Tennessee. If it was anything less than that, I would definitely play it. But I think Tennessee gets them good here. Tennessee bounces back. Tennessee's a team, if they can play adequate on offense, they're going to have a shot. And they went ice cold against Kentucky on the road the other night. Still played an all right game, but almost good enough to win. Kentucky played very well. So look for Tennessee on Saturday. Again, I'll post all these at BLS_PRP. But these are games that I'm going to have my eye on for Saturday that I'll put up my final numbers once we get the lines and get to see what the prices are. Also on Saturday, Purdue taking on Wisconsin. Purdue, another team that lost control. They were in total control the other night at Michigan. Couldn't get the job done. I think coming back home here against a pretty decent Wisconsin team, Purdue probably be a small favorite, 3-4, something like that. Look for the Boilermakers. If they're not laying more than 5, I think they're worth a shot here against Wisconsin to bounce back. And then Arizona. Team had been playing very well. They go on the road the other night. They lose a tough one. They battled hard, but wasn't enough. They got Houston coming to town. I think that maybe they could be live here. Arizona seems they got it kind of figured out. I mean, Tommy Lloyd is not sure how great of a coach he is. They really were bad in the NCAA tournament last year, obviously, with that terrible upset. But I think maybe they could be good here at home. Houston, again, struggles to score. So look for Arizona. We'll take a shot with the Wildcats at home. Again, I'll verify all these numbers and post these plays on BLS_PRP for Saturday. All right, rolling along here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 119, coming to you from the Watchdog Studios in downtown Wheeling here on a nice February day, getting you ready for Daytona 500 weekend. But first, we're going to talk some golf. It's the Genesis Open. Genesis Invitational, as it's formerly called. Planted at Torrey Pines, the Torrey Pines course number. I think it's the South Course in San Diego. So this tournament is normally in the Los Angeles area. And due to the wildfires and just the disrepair right now in the Los Angeles area, they decided to move it down to San Diego. So they just played Torrey Pines a few weeks ago. And now we're coming back for a different event, different setup and things like that. But it's good that they had Torrey Pines nearby to play the Genesis. So we'll see what happens here. Obviously, this is about a day in. If you're listening to this, you already have some play going on. Scheffler is the favorite, as usual. And again, I post all my golf plays, BLS_PRP. Post those always on Wednesday night or Thursday morning for you, so you can get them ahead of the airing of the show, and you can get on some of the golf plays throughout the season. So, Scheffler the favorite, +350. Can't play him. Thought he played just so-so last week. The only guy at a low price that I would take a shot with at all might be Morikawa. This is his primary putting service. This is what he's best at. He's 14-1. Think he could be in contention. I don't love 14-1, but it's not terrible. So, we're going to go with Colin Morikawa as our lowest price play. Ludvig Åberg, who had a meltdown a few weeks ago, I think he may bounce back a little bit here. He's 22-1, could be strong. He's played well here in the past. Hideki Matsuyama also at 22-1, playing really good golf right now. Hard to go off Hideki. He's been a guy that We've been backing quite a bit over the recent weeks. I thought he would get a little hotter last week. He was almost able to cash a top 24th, but came apart late in the round. Taylor Pendrith at 45-1. We'll take a shot with him. He's had a really good season. Victor Hovland, this guy has had a lot of problems. He had injuries. He changed clubs. He went from probably being the best player in the world to a player that's really struggled to find his form. So I think he's starting to come back into it a little bit, very similar to Daniel Berger in a sense, although Hovland's turnaround hasn't taken as long as Berger's, which has been a couple of years now. But Hovland at 60-1, I think worth a shot. We're going to take a crack with Victor to get back into form and contend here at the Genesis Invitational. Will Zalatoris, another guy we've been touting over the recent weeks whose form is coming back. He was a guy that was in contention for several majors a few years ago and had some injuries of his own. And when you have injuries, especially to your wrist areas, and some of these guys have the knee injuries, and it's really hard to come back. It's just amazing how one little thing in your swing can screw everything up. So Zalatoris on the right track at 45-1. We'll take a shot with him. Also like Daniel Berger, as I said, I wish I would have given him out last week. I wanted to wait one more week to see if he was continuing on the form that I thought he was on. He's 80-1 this week. That's still a very good price. He contended last week, and I expect him to be in the top 20 again this week, so long as he hasn't hit the wall where he's kind of tired from playing a lot more golf than he has over the recent months. Adam Scott, 80-1. He's been very solid, just a top 20 machine. He should be in contention, at least for the top 20s, top 10s, without a doubt. Justin Rose, our go-to man. He's 120-1, playing good golf. Could have won a couple of weeks ago at Pebble Beach. So we'll go with Rosie at 121, and then Gary Woodland. Heard him tipped by a couple of people this week. He's starting to get himself back into the form that he had when he won the U.S. Open a few years ago. So Gary Woodland at 150-1 will be our longest price on the board that we'll take a shot with this weekend at the Genesis Invitational. And this year it is at Torrey Pines in San Diego. Again, BLS_PRP. You can find all the golf plays that we have before the tournament even starts. Last week's tournament, Thomas Dietrich, the Belgian. He was a guy that I had on my short list, but he didn't make the cut. So no excuse. I didn't have him, and apologies. He was 85-1 at the Waste Management. Played very well. Kind of Daniel Berger gave him a little run on the back nine on Sunday, but just couldn't get any closer than two shots. Tried to put some pressure on him, but it just didn't happen. All right, golf, get kicking it up here. We're starting to get better fields, and out there on the West Coast swing, we'll be heading back towards Florida and down here to the east and in the southern part of the East Coast to get it ready to bring us up to Augusta here, and not all that long. So we'll be happy to talk about that stuff as it approaches, no doubt about it. But we got NASCAR. It's the Super Bowl of auto racing, the Daytona 500 this week at Daytona International Speedway. Can't wait for this. Always an exciting race, no doubt about it. It's just nice to have NASCAR back, something positive to talk about, a sport that does things the right way and has a lot of admirable qualities about it amongst its player or its driver colony and just overall in the sport. It's a very patriotic sport. It's nice to see people come out and support NASCAR. NASCAR's back on the upswing after some down years, and it's been on the right track here for the last half dozen years or so. So let's get into it. Daytona 500, gave you a few thoughts on people that we liked last week. Got a little bit more data this week. We had practice this morning, so we started to get a little taste of who could maybe be contenders. There's a lot of contenders here, so it's hard to weed it out by just watching practice for 45 minutes or whatever and thinking that you're going to get it all figured out there. A lot of this is going to come down to luck, so there's no other way to talk about it other than, can you find the guy that is going to get you or is going to have the most luck this week? Noah Gragson was best in practice this morning. Kyle Larson was pretty fast. I think he was third, and you had Eric Jones was second, and you can't put too much stock into this. The way that I look at this, when I'm looking at these super speedway races, meaning Daytona, Talladega, whose number is going to get pulled is basically for the good or the bad, because you have a situation where you're in close quarters, you're going to get collected in these wrecks, things are going to go wrong for you from time to time. How many times in a row can it happen? And if you keep finishing out of that crash, if you survive it and you miss the crash, this race, Talladega, then the Coke Zero in Daytona in the summer. If you miss all the wrecks there, you're bound to get collected in the next one. So I went back and looked at some of the racers who had bad luck last year at Daytona at both times, and those are guys that I'm going to focus on a little bit more here. Tyler Reddick, he was a guy I'm very high on. I'm very high on him this week and this season. He crashed in both races. He led 24 laps in the Daytona 500. He didn't lead in the race in August, but he did crash. So there's two times Tyler Reddick had a very good car, and he was collected in a wreck. Ryan Blaney also. Two times last year, he led 12 laps in the 500. He didn't lead any in the August race, but he had a very good car. He was up in the top pack most of the race until he got crashed out. So Reddick, Blaney right away. Joey Logano, defending series champion. He led 9 laps in the 500, and then he crashed. And he led 34 laps in the race in August, and he crashed. So is Joey Logano due to get a little bit of luck? It's been my experience in tracking NASCAR for several years, several decades really, is sometimes your luck, it's just your luck. Like, how many times are you going to test your luck out there racing at 200-plus miles an hour, an inch away from a guy? You're not always going to get lucky and miss it. But you're not always going to get collected either. So I like to play guys who have just wrecked back-to-back times in a track like this, because they're bound to then get, it's a law of averages, they're eventually going to come through unscathed. So those are three guys right off the bat to look at. Daniel Suarez, another one. Suarez led a couple of laps at the 500, and he had that massive fire at his car. It almost burned him alive in August. So he really didn't even start the race. I'm not even sure that he ran. Well, he might have ran to the first pit stop, actually. I think that's when it happened, his first pit stop. But bad fire there. So there's a guy, again, bad luck for him. Ricky Stenhouse, the champion, not last year. William Byron won it last year, but 2 years ago. Ricky Stenhouse, back-to-back crashes here at Daytona. He led some laps in the summer race here. So he's another guy that you say, okay, it's time for Stenhouse, the pendulum to swing back towards Stenhouse. So Reddick, Blaney, Stenhouse, Logano, and Suarez. Michael McDowell also, but he's switching teams, and he's a good super speedway racer, but I just don't trust him the way that I trust those other drivers. Focusing in on a couple of guys who were on the other swing. So you got Chris Bell. He finished third in both races last year. He led 22 laps at the Daytona 500. He's a guy that I like this week, but it concerns me because he has escaped. He's been too lucky in these races. And at 18, 19 to 1, he's trending in the right direction as far as results go, but he's due to have that collection. He's going to get collected here. So I'm not probably going to go too much in on Chris Bell, although I do like him to contend. That doesn't mean that he will survive. So let's go to some guys that I think might survive this week. Brad Keselowski, last year in the 500, Brad crashed. So can he bounce back? He was a little bit better in the summer race, middle of the pack. I think he finished, top 10. So he was eighth. Brad at 11-1. He's always really, really good at this track. So I would definitely consider him. Price might be a little too short, though. His teammate, Chris Buescher, at 19.5-1, around 20-1 for him. He didn't have an overly great season at these big tracks like he had the year prior. He was 10th in the summer race, and then he was 18th a year ago at the 500. So I don't know if I love Buescher, but the price to me is pretty good for him, so I would take a shot with him at 20-1. Tyler Reddick, who I said before, I like him a lot at 16-1. I think he's very live in this race. He won at Talladega last year. He's got the 2311 has, good super speedway setup. They got Denny Hamlin to learn from. Bubba Wallace is pretty good at these tracks. And I think that Reddick will be in contention. Austin Cindric won the race a couple of years ago. Hasn't really done much at Daytona, but he's always in the mix. So he's another guy that I think maybe, just maybe, the luck's starting to swing back his way. Wasn't his best finish last year, but he wasn't terrible. So Cindric, to me, was a guy worth looking at. I believe he was 18th in the summer race. And let's see. I don't see him on my sheet for some reason. I don't see him for the 500 last year. Oh, there he was, 22nd. So not good. So maybe the pendulum's swinging for him. 19.5, 20-1 on Cindric. think it's worth a shot. Todd Gilliland ran really well here, got collected in a big wreck. He led 16 laps. He had a car good enough to win this race. He's 20-1. I like him again. We'll fire away with Todd Gilliland. So those are my top tier guys. Some other guys, though, that I think are worth a shot. Ryan Preece, I talk about him every year. He's upgraded his team. I think he's got a real shot at around 40-1 to be in contention here. Noah Gragson, this guy I'm high on for the season. He's a little bit out there mentally, but very talented racer. He was fast today. He's 37-1. I like what I'm seeing out of him in the offseason, and I think he's starting to get himself together. Chase Briscoe, I will tell you this. Chase Briscoe is now in the Martin Truex number 19 car. Truex retiring, of course. He will be in this race, but he's not going to run the full schedule. And Briscoe inherits a really, really good race team here for Joe Gibbs Racing. I think he is going to be a massive contender in a lot of races this year with great equipment under him. And I look for Chase Briscoe to make a major jump and potentially even have a shot of winning the Daytona 500 this week at 27-1. Justin Haley, always good on the super speedways. He's 45-1. I like his chances to be in the top 10, top 15 at least in this race and right around the end to have a shot of winning. Corey LaJoy, who's running only a partial schedule, he's 70-1. He always is in the mix here. Great average finish. He ran pretty well at practice today, so look for Corey LaJoy at a big number. And then John Hunter Nemechek, kind of under the radar guy here. He's had sneaky good results at these super speedways. So John Hunter Nemechek, 71-1 for him. I think he could maybe be a top 10 car this weekend. So those are the guys that I'm leaning towards. I would not recommend playing guys at short prices. This race could prove that it proves each and every year that a big price can win it, and you're not going to get the value on your Denny Hamlins and your Loganos. And you know, even though I talk Logano up and Ryan Blaney, and you know, these guys are due for good finishes. Chase Elliott at 13, like, it's just a little too short for me. You got Ross Chastain at 22-1, Alex Bowman 22-1. Can't talk you off of either one of those guys because, you know, Alex Bowman was right there. He finished second last year to his teammate, had a car good enough to win. Can his luck continue? I don't know. So anyway, I'm going to go with, if I have to make a top play here, and that's what we try to do. And remember, the Daytona 500 has had the last eight races at Daytona International Speedway, the four summer races and then the four 500s, the last eight races have had eight different winners. So that ought to tell you that somebody new is in line to take it down this year. And I think Tyler Reddick is the guy. I would say Tyler Reddick and Chase Briscoe are my top selections for the Daytona 500 this week. I think both guys right in the mix to the very end, but we're going to go with Reddick as our official pick here on Bettor's Last Stand, show number 119 here on the Watchdog Network, getting you ready for Daytona 500 weekend here. Obviously, Mountaineers basketball will have all five OVAC boys games here on the Watchdog Network tomorrow for you. So watchdognetwork.com is where you want to be. All five classifications of the OVAC boys championship games tomorrow, and you'll want to be on watchdognetwork.com all day long from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Don't want to go anywhere. Have that watchdog on your mobile device or in your car, whatever, wherever you're going to be, have the watchdognetwork.com with you. All right, let's talk a little bit about NASCAR Cup Series championships this year. So 2025, obviously, more and more of this each year, more and more racers have a shot on winning this thing. And yeah, you have Kevin Harvick retired 2 years ago, Martin Truex, past champion, retired this past year. So some of these guys are getting a little bit old. You got Kyle Busch still fighting it out. Will he bounce back this year? I don't know. I seem like he might be starting to lose it a touch. But Stuart Haas is no longer a team, so you got some shakeups from that point of view. As I mentioned, I'm very high on Chase Briscoe this year. He's 18-1 to win the championship for Joe Gibbs Racing in Martin Truex's old car. Not certain that he'll be able to win it, but I do believe he'll be a playoff car, and I do think he's probably going to advance a couple of rounds into the playoffs. But guys that I'm interested in, Tyler Reddick, as I said before, he's about 9-1. I like him. I like Chase Elliott to bounce back again at 11-1. Chris Bell, very high on him. I think he's really going to have a shot of winning it this year. He's just been a little inconsistent, but man, his versatility, it's almost second to none right now. He may have the best short track versus super speedway of anybody going right now outside of, I guess, Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney, the past, you know, Cup Series champions of the last 2 years. Kyle Larson, who's the favorite, he's just not great at the super speedway, so I think that holds him back a little bit. But, you know, worthy favorite. He won the most races last year. But Bell at 5.5, 6-1, really going to be tough this year. I want to pick him, but I don't love the price. So we're going to go with Reddick and Chase Elliott at 8.5-1 and 11-1. And then Briscoe as my long shot. Also think Brad Keselowski at 28-1. He improved quite a bit for RFK last year. The wins weren't there, but the consistency was. The prior year was inconsistent. So I think this year he puts it, you know, both together. And he makes a strong push to be at least in the final four for the playoffs this season. Future bets. Now, NASCAR's added a bunch of markets here in recent years, which is pretty exciting. So these, you know, a few years ago, they didn't have this stuff. Ty Gibbs over a half a win. I think he absolutely gets in a victory lane this year. He was knocking on the door so many times last year, and we kept waiting for him to get there. Just couldn't get it done. But Ty Gibbs over a half a win, absolutely on that one at minus 160. Chase Briscoe over a half a win at minus 135. He will be in victory lane for sure one time this year. Shane Van Gisbergen is going to run a full circuit this year for Trackhouse. And Trackhouse wasn't very good last year. Suarez won. Chastain didn't. They were a little off. Will they bounce back? Are they a good team? Yeah, they're a good team. They are. They're not bad. But I think Van Gisbergen at 1.5 wins, I think he may get one. He might get one on a road course, a street course. But this is the big leagues now. And, you know, you're not coming in here unknown and going to sneak up on guys now. So that's not going to happen. So I like him under the 1.5. I think he might win a race, but I don't think he'll win two. Plus 110 on the under for Shane Van Gisbergen. Austin Cindric over a half a win. So I think he gets into victory lane at plus 110. All he needs to do is win one race. Austin Cindric, another guy, very versatile. He's very good on the super speedways, and he's very good on road courses. So there's two distinct types of tracks. There's a ton of road course tracks this year, and Cindric will be live in all those, and he will be live at Daytona and Talladega and the super speedways, Atlanta as well. So Austin Cindric gets into victory lane once this year for sure. Brad Keselowski over 1.5 victories at plus 115. We're going to go with Brad. I think he wins at least two, probably three this year. Again, Brad, really, really good at your intermediates, really good on your short tracks, and really good on your super speedways. The only black mark for Brad would be maybe road courses, and I'm sure he's continuing to battle, but he's just never been great on road courses. Joey Logano over 2.5 wins. I think he'll get three again. He's just too talented not to. Again, a car that can win on all types of tracks. 2.5 wins for Logano. Very good at strategy, and I think he gets there. That's at minus 115. Top fours for the championship. These are guys that will make the championship top four, meaning in the final race. Going to go Chase Elliott at plus 225, Brad Keselowski at 6-1, and Tyler Reddick at plus $2. He is one of our picks to win it all. He and Chase Elliott are my co-picks to take down the championship this year. So they're going to be the two that I'm focusing in on my bets for NASCAR season-long wagering. So that's our summary of the Daytona 500. I'll have all these picks posted again at BLS_PRP on X, getting you ready for the Great American Race. It's just a couple days away here for you, so hopefully you enjoy that as much as we do. Hopefully the weather will be good and we see some really good racing down at Daytona International Speedway. Rolling along here, Better's Last Stand show number 119 here on the Watchdog Network from the Pine Room Studios down here in downtown Wheeling. Again, getting you ready for OVAC boys basketball action all day tomorrow, 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. Actually, it'll go past 6 p.m. Those are the tip times, so you'll probably be going into the 8 o'clock hour for that one. So it's good to be focusing on hoops, but now we got NASCAR and golf and, of course, soccer to round out the show. A couple things going on in the world of bad beats here on Better's Last Stand. I didn't talk about these in the first portion of the program when we're talking Super Bowl, but our bad beats this week, if you had Jahan Dotson for the first touchdown score in the Super Bowl, oh, my condolences. 85-1 ticket. I do know a few people that had that. He gets originally scored a touchdown or signaled a touchdown. They review it. It's marked down on the 1 yard line. Of course, Jalen Hurts scores on the very next play. So that one stung a little bit. How about this one? Devontae Smith, longest touchdown. He scores a 46-yarder. The game's all but over at that point. Literally 2 minutes later, Xavier Worthy, 50-yard touchdown score for the Chiefs. So that stung a little bit. In garbage time, Worthy burns you there. And then in basketball, if you saw this one, now there's been some other bad beats in basketball, but this one, this is one where, like, this is the true definition of a bad beat because it took a miraculous feat one way or another, and it took away a almost certain victory for you. And those are what, you know, constitutes a bad beat to me. It's not some of these other silly things where 15 different things happen in a 10-minute stretch. But this one in basketball is a bad one. Michigan, -3.5. They're at Indiana. They're winning the game 70-64. They hit a couple free throws to pretty much ice the game. You're given 3.5 on the road. You're up 6. There's 2.3 seconds left when Indiana inbounds the ball after the made free throw from the Wolverines. The Indiana kid takes a couple of dribbles and shoots a 75-footer, basically just, you know, whatever, I'm just going to whip it up, and it goes in. 70-67 final. Indiana covers the 3.5. If you had Michigan, I'm sure you wanted to break your television, and I don't blame you. That was a really, really bad beat there. Just, you know, a 75-footer. I mean, he just whipped it up in the air. Just, that's just something you do in the gym when you're jerking around with your teammates. Like, you know, it's not something that you expect to be made at a high percentage, and poof, goes right in, covers the spread. If you had Indiana, congratulations, you had to be pretty happy. So those were some of the tougher beats this week. You can find miserable beats out there in every sport, whether it's tennis, golf, soccer, everything. They're all around you. Just all you can do is grind it out and then move on to the next one. New York reports a U.S. record $2.48 billion in mobile wagering for the month of January. Wow, just absolutely amazing. And that doesn't even count the Super Bowl. So we'll see what February looks like for them, and then we'll see what March Madness looks like for them. They got $247 million in revenue during that month as well. So $2.48 billion in, $247 million in profit. Wow, pretty strong month there. Nevada Books won $22.1 million off of Super Bowl 59, the most ever in the state. However, the handle was down 20.5%, just $151.6 million. So, poor attendance there. So, it's very interesting. A lot of the properties reported low numbers in actual turnout and ticket count in person, while the mobile apps are where it has been picked up, obviously, as you look at New York with the $2.48 billion in mobile. So, people aren't going out to the strip and spending all this money when they can just go to a local bar or a closer book to their home and bet on their apps. So, that's a trend that is really interesting there. We'll see what the numbers are like in March Madness for people out in Nevada. BetMGM says the Super Bowl was its single biggest game result in history, and they came out on the right side of it. So lots of Chiefs money, it looks like, and Chiefs and under from some sharp bettors at BetMGM. It did not work out well for us here as well, too. FanDuel took multiple exact score bets for the Eagles to win the game 40-22 at 500-1. The biggest being $50, paid $25,000. Well done to those bettors there. That is incredibly impressive. FanDuel also reported a peak number of nearly 70,000 bets per minute at one point on Sunday leading up to Super Bowl 59. 70,000 bets per minute, and dropped a handle of $16.6 million, a 19% increase from last year. So you're seeing the traffic on the apps is going through the roof. The in-person ticket writing and people walking in and doing these and traveling out west to do it is just dying off. People would rather gamble the money they have on their apps than they would spend, you know, take money out of their pocket that they would gamble with, spending it on hotels and room and flights and all that stuff. So I see that trend, and that would be concerning if I was a property owner who is depending on that. Now, a lot of them are making the shift where they're not as dependent on casino. They're running themselves like luxury hotel resort type places instead of casinos. So maybe they're trying to make that move to try to preempt this. Many of them have apps as well. So you can continue to see the app numbers grow, continue to see the in-person betting reduced, unfortunately. Ipe Mizuhara, the translator for Shohei Ohtani, sentenced to 5 years in prison for stealing over $17 million from Shohei Ohtani. And I put stealing in quotes and question mark because I'm still thinking there's more to this story, and I still am bothered that Pat Hoberg was told that he should have known that somebody was using an account to bet on baseball. But Shohei Ohtani didn't have to worry about that. I find that to be an incredible conflict of it just very hypocritical, I guess. It contradicts what they made and did to Pat Hoberg, and looks like Ohtani just continues to skate free because he's a very marketable player in a very marketable market over in the eastern part of the world, and he's one of the best players in MLB. So I think there's more to it. Maybe someday we'll find out the real truth there, but these leagues, when it's something they don't want to get out, they bury it, and they buried this one for sure. The Steelers, now the favorite to land Aaron Rodgers at 2-1. I don't want to talk about football. I'm sick of it. But this is just nuts to me. I don't understand what either one of them would want to do with each other, but whatever. Onward and upward. Most bet Super Bowl props, how about these? All these ones that were bet through the roof. And the only thing that saved real bloodbaths in some places, myself included, were Saquon Barkley, over 111 yards rushing. That was a loss. Dallas Goedert, 48.5 receiving yards, loss. Kelce, over 60.5 receiving yards, loss. Barkley to score a touchdown, loss. Devontae Smith, over 4.5 receptions. He only had 4, loss. So there's your top 5 props across the board, the consensus props for players, and all of them lost. So that was the saving grace for many books, like I said, as mine, that Barkley didn't score a touchdown, or it would have been even worse than it was already. But again, we closed the door on another football season. Thank goodness it's all over with. We have several months of peace and freedom, so we had to start talking about the misery of training camps and 20-team playoffs and all this other stuff, 20-game schedule in the NFL. Just give me soccer, give me NASCAR, give me golf, give me hockey, give me baseball. We'll be good. By the time it works its way back around again, I guess we'll be ready to pay attention to it a little bit. All right, let's get to something happy. Let's end the show on a few happy notes here. And one of the happy notes is definitely going to be the Four Nations face-off here. Hockey is at the forefront here as you have the teams of Canada, United States, Finland, and Sweden all doing battle in the Four Nations. Now, Russia, as I said last week, should be included in this, and it's ridiculous that they aren't. And the Czechs and the Slovaks should be as well, probably the Latvians, but that's all right. We're going to focus on what we have. I put my Four Nations plays up last week. The games have already started. You're going to have some more games tomorrow with a really nice doubleheader, I believe, with the United States and Canada, the feature game. That is tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and Finland and Sweden will be at 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. So a couple games in the books already. You had a game on Thursday, had a game on Wednesday. And, you know, here's what I had last week. Again, I put them up at BLS_PRP. I thought Finland would get over 3.5 round robin points, Canada under 5.5 round robin points, Sweden under 4.5 round robin points, the USA over 5.5 round robin points. Top point scorer in the tournament. Jeez, tongue twister there. Patrick Laine, I think he gets it done at 40-1. I like his upside there. Been playing very, very well for Montreal. I also think he's the top point scorer for Finland, obviously, at 40-1. Actually, he wouldn't be 40-1. I had that written down wrong. To score on his own team, it's not going to be 40 if he's the tournament high scorer at 40-1. Canada's top scorer, I think Cale Makar. He'll be running that power play. I think he'll be on the ice a ton for them. So we'll go with him at 9-1. Sweden, Mika Zibanejad, he's probably going to be the first line center, and he's going to quarterback the power play, and he's really good on the power play at 20-1 for the Swedes. I think he will be an imperative part of them being successful in this tournament. And Kyle Connor for the United States, I think he's going to be a dangerous player for the USA. So those were the bets that we had. I'll post anything else that I like throughout the tournament. I'm also going to post these ones for tomorrow. I'm going to take Finland. I'm going to take Finland plus 1.5. I think they hang with Sweden. This is a big rivalry match. I also like the game under 5.5. I think it's a low-scoring affair, probably a 3-2. Hopefully it's a 3-2 that we can cover, or we can win the game outright at plus 145. The 8 o'clock game, USA versus Canada. I think USA is just a little bit better than Canada. Again, Connor Hellebuck, who I'm not a fan of. I know he's got great stats, and he's playing really good in Winnipeg, but this is a whole different caliber of team that he's got in front of him and behind him. I would be a little concerned, and as we said last week, he fell apart against the Avalanche in a playoff series last year and was horrible. Like, he had the yips. Like, he couldn't stop anything. So I would be very worried about him in a high-pressure game like this. So I think the over definitely in play there, over 5.5. I think there'll be goals in this game. But I do think the USA is a little bit better top to bottom than Canada, and I think they find a way to get it done. This is their golden generation. This is their chance to take a stranglehold on the world of hockey, win this tournament, win the Olympic gold next year. And then it's the USA that everybody's trying to catch, because Canada definitely has some deficiencies in the net, although I think Aiden Hill's pretty decent, and he's a big game goalie. He won a Stanley Cup. I think he can get the job done, but they're going to go with Binnington, who won a Stanley Cup also, but has not been as good of form over the last three or four seasons. So curious decision with Canada. Will he remain the goalie throughout? I don't know. But I think USA and over in their game, and Finland and under in the two games on Saturday. Monday's games, a lot of it will depend on what is needed in this situation. Again, I would play the Finns. I just like their style. I like their camaraderie and their team chemistry. And the Swedes, I think, will be very tricky for the United States, especially if the United States are able to beat Canada. I think you could see a major letdown spot here. That's the thing that USA and Canada have got to combat that the other two teams don't. But they really do. It's just because this has taken place in North America, people say, USA and Canada, they're only going to be worried about each other. Well, Finland and Sweden, obviously, geographically, they're massive rivals. So they are going to want to beat each other. But there's a chip on the shoulder of both of these Scandinavian countries, because everybody's just assuming this is going to be USA and Canada in the final. I'm not so sure. Finland's had some injuries that have probably hurt them, with Heiskanen being out. That's just a massive loss. They also lost Rasmus Dahlin. I think it was Rasmus Dahlin. So big losses for them on the blue line. Not sure they can overcome it, but I like the way that they're coached. I like the style they play. Their top six is the best that they've ever had in Finnish history. Same with Sweden. Sweden's got good players. I think they have a couple lockdown defense pairs too. And if Erik Karlsson can play better than he has for the Penguins, they're going to be a problem. So I like the dogs in these tournaments like this. I think Sweden and Finland are both pesky, and I think they can hang around and see if it's enough. But getting off to a good start, obviously very important at the Four Nations face off here in Montreal and in Boston over the next 2 weeks. So again, BLS_PRP, I'll have all the plays there. Should be good hockey action. Tune in tomorrow for two good games. I think the first game is on ABC at 1:00, second game at 8:00 on ABC. All right, finishing it up with football, of course. The round kind of football, the good kind of football. We're done with that American pigskin crap, and we're going on to the round ball stuff that we've been red hot in. Of course, we were down about 1.6 units overall last week, but 11-0-2 in our FA Cup soccer last week. We were up 14 units. Very good. EPL 64-43-3 run over the last 6 weeks. We're up 50.95 units, or almost 51 units. Soccer overall, we're up over 65 units over the last 6 weeks. Really good. I don't know how it keeps up. We did very well yesterday. Actually, not great. 2-1-2. So we had two pushes, two wins, and one loss in the Champions League. We have some games going on right now. So we'll mark those to the tally for next week. But focusing in on the Premier League, which is back after a weekend off of FA Cup matchups. And we'll talk the Champions League knockout stage leg number two. So these teams all play each other once, and then they all play each other at the reverse fixture next week at whoever the road team was this time will be the home team next week. So we'll sort that all out. I'll have those plays. The pricing's not out for those, as those games are just finishing right now. But we'll have those picks up for you, BLS_PRP. Let's talk about the Premier League, though. We're back at it, and it's good to have it back. Saturday morning, Arsenal and Leicester City. This is a 7:30 a.m. kickoff. Arsenal minus 340. The total three is three even right now. So I do think that Leicester is way overmatched here. But Arsenal just lost Kai Havertz, one of their better attacking players. He is out for the season. Looks like he tore his hamstring at training the other day. They've won the last six in this series. I don't think they'll lose to Leicester here, but I do like under three. I think Arsenal has really got to watch its bodies now, because they've got some injuries. They lose Havertz. That really hurts their depth. And they're in the Champions League right now. They're in the FA Cup. They have a lot of things to juggle here, and I don't think you're going to see them maxing out to try to beat Leicester City. So I think this is a low-scoring game. I'm going to go under the three. Three of the last four have went under while the Gunners were at Leicester. So under three in Arsenal and Leicester. Newcastle at Manchester City. Manchester City minus 115. They continue to be favored here. I have to take umbrage with this. This is way, way mispriced in my opinion. Now, Manchester City just blew a game. Now, a game that Real Madrid was the better team the whole day, and City probably had a goal that should have been called back on offsides. Mysteriously, it didn't. So Haaland got his first, and then he scored a second on a penalty, which shouldn't even have been a penalty. And second of all, the foul occurred outside of the box, so if it was going to be anything, it should have just been a free kick. And both times it went Manchester City's way. Well, guess what? They blew a 2-1 lead with about 5 minutes to go in the match. Just inexcusable, just demoralizing. But Real Madrid, a much better team there. But back to the task in hand here in the English Premier League for the weekend. Manchester City should not be this type of favorite at home against a really tough Newcastle team who's been playing very well. Newcastle at plus 265. I think they go in and pound Manchester City here, beat them by at least a goal. I think they'll beat them by two. I think Manchester City, I don't think they can even play any of their key players in this match, because if they're going to stay in the Champions League, they have to win at Real Madrid next Wednesday. And this is not going to be something that's going to be easy to recover from, a game against Newcastle, because Newcastle, a very pressure-packed team. This is not going to be an easy match. So I think if you see their players play, I don't think it's going to be for very long. I don't think you can play Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland and some of these guys through the entire Foden. I don't think you'll be able to play them the whole match, because you can't have them worn out, because you have no chance on the road at the Bernabeu if you don't have fresh legs, and I don't like it. But I like Newcastle. I think they rout Manchester City here. And I like the game over as well. I think this has something along the lines of a 4-1 Newcastle feel to it, maybe even like 5-2. I think this could be a bloodbath for City and maybe the final nail in their coffin for the season. Nottingham Forest at Fulham. Fulham plus 115, a small favorite there. Forest plus 240. This game, maybe a draw. I don't know. Fulham pretty good at Craven Cottage. I think both teams will score in this game, and I like the game over 2.5. The home team has won 3 out of 4, so that makes me lean towards Fulham. Again, they're pretty good at the Cottage, so lean to Fulham. Both teams to score, though, and over the 2.5. Ipswich at Aston Villa. Aston Villa minus 250, $6 on Ipswich. Ipswich get a win in the FA Cup last week. Big step up in class here at Aston Villa. 3 of the last 4 between these two have went over. I think Villa wins this one easily. We're going to play them on the Asian handicap plus or minus 1.5, minus 1.75, something along that. I think they'll win by at least 2 goals. Brentford at West Ham, a London derby. This one's a tricky one. West Ham has not been good. Brentford at plus 180 to me seems like a great play here. But both these teams, I mean, you just don't know where you're going to get in a rivalry match like this. So I'm going to go with Brentford on the road, plus 180. I think they definitely score. But West Ham has struggled to score goals, so I'm not going to go the over here. I think Brentford is the side there at a good plus 180 price. Bournemouth at Southampton. Bournemouth minus 185, plus 450 on Southampton. The total 3. I like goals here. Bournemouth's been playing awesome. They had another nice win over the weekend in the FA Cup. They've won the last 3 in the series. I'm going to go with Bournemouth on the Asian handicap. I think they win the game by at least 2 goals. We'll go over the 3 as well. Southampton may get 1 in. This game could be 3-4-1 in favor of Bournemouth. Everton and Crystal Palace. Now, Everton and Liverpool just played the Merseyside Derby, which is one of the most intense rivalry matches in English football. They had like a frost issue or something, and the field, they said, was unplayable a few weeks ago. So they postponed it. Liverpool obviously had a bye in the Champions League, so they were able to fit it in. So they played today to a 2-2 draw. It's just a taxing game for both teams, emotionally draining game. So Everton goes to Crystal Palace here. I do think Everton can score a goal here, and they played a lot better under David Moyes. They were in the game today, and they played pretty well. I would lean Palace here, but I think both teams score, but I also like this game under a tad just because I don't know what kind of legs Everton's going to have. Small lean to Palace, but I don't love the minus 105 there. I think if I got to get a plus price on Palace, I would have been in on them, but I'm not going to take them at that. Everton's played good enough. This could be a draw. So we'll go with both teams to score and a lean to the under in Everton at Crystal Palace. And then Liverpool plays their game on Sunday morning against Wolves, again coming off of the Merseyside Derby, probably going to be a little exhausted, and they have to start focusing on Champions League, not this coming week, but in the following weeks. So shouldn't be too much of a problem for them as far as personnel goes. Wolves have been outscored 14-1 in their last 6 matches at Anfield. So I do think Liverpool is good enough, even with reserves, to win this game. I like under 3.5, though. I think this is like a 2-0, maybe a 2-1 Liverpool win. I think they probably gear it down a little bit, but take care of business. So we'll go under 3.5 in a lean to Liverpool in that one. Manchester United at Tottenham, the finale of the weekend, 11:30 a.m. on Sunday. Tottenham plus 145 favorite. United plus 160, 275 on the draw. Draw might be in the cards here. Four of the last five over in this fixture. I like both teams to score. Again, we talked about Tottenham. They're an impossible team to figure out, and they're an impossible team to bet under, although they did come in under the last time they played, which hurt us. There's only two goals in the game. But I do like over three here. United very sloppy at the back. Tottenham will press and try to score, and they could get beat on the counterattack as well by Manchester United or from a set piece. So we're definitely going with both teams to score and over the three in Spurs and Manchester United. All right, that'll do it for the Premier League. Again, I'll have my Champions League plays for leg two. This is when, you know, all the marbles, this is for everything next week. And a lot of close, tight ties here. So not too many teams other than, I think, PSG has it to the point where they can coast to victory. A lot of 2-1 and a lot of tight one-goal fixtures in the first round, first leg. So the second leg should be very entertaining. And we'll have those picks on BLS underscore PRP and get you ready for another exciting week of Champions League football. American football's done, but hey, right around the corner, you got March Madness. You even got Australian rules football coming up in a few weeks. Man, I can't wait for that. That's almost more exciting to me than March Madness. But we'll focus on the task at hand. Pitchers and catchers are here. We gave you some baseball plays today that we added to our portfolio for baseball season. We'll talk more MLB in the coming weeks, more basketball and golf, NASCAR, hockey, and of course soccer. Getting you ready for a interesting close to the winter season, pushing you into spring and getting you ready for Kentucky Derby and horse racing right around the corner. All that stuff will be coming upon us here before you know it. But that's going to do it for us here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 119 from the Watchdog Studios here in downtown Wheeling, getting you ready for a full weekend of action here on the Watchdog Network. West Virginia dropped a tough one. I didn't talk about that in our college basketball portion of the program, but West Virginia, bad loss last night, I thought, to BYU at home. Now, BYU's not a bad team, but the Mountaineers led that game. It was a close game throughout, up and down, but the Mountaineers really just let it get away in the last couple of minutes of the game, and I think that's a game that they're probably going to regret losing because they got to start to bank some wins here. They're at Baylor on Saturday, 2 o'clock. You can hear that one right here on the Watchdog Network on WKKX and WVOY. And if you're looking for those OVAC streams, those will be at watchdognetwork.com. Again, all five games from the OVAC Boys Championship games over at OU Eastern. That'll be coming your way tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. Our guys will be on the call along with Coach Heinerman and Ross throughout the day, so stay tuned for those tomorrow. Enjoy the Four Nations hockey, enjoy the soccer, enjoy the Daytona 500, the golf, and all the college hoops all weekend long here. So best of luck in your wagers, and we will see you next week for show number 120 on Bettors Last Stand here on the Watchdog Network. Have a great weekend, everybody.